Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Ed Thompson with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketer Radio. Every Thursday at 1, we meet to talk to real revenue marketers so we can learn tips and tricks on how to make that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. That's more than just listening. This is an interactive show, so please feel free to call in or chat, and we'd be happy to include you in the conversation. Before I introduce our guest, I'd like to take a moment to define the term revenue marketer. And we have a lot of listeners who've not heard this term before. A revenue marketer is a specific type of marketer, one who has revenue or revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and interactions they create. Now, they're responsible for the top of the sales funnel and interacting with and nurturing leads until they're sales ready. Now, they all use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with their CRM to power their revenue marketing practice and get revenue results. This show explores this role with all of its facets: metrics, people, skills, compensation, organizational structure, processes, sales and marketing alignment, technology, content and creative, and demand generation strategies and tactics. Now, every revenue marketer on this show, again, where you may be today, and they're here to share their journeys, their successes, and their gotchas, so your journey to becoming an elite revenue marketer will be quicker and smoother. I'm really thrilled to introduce today's guests. We have Christine Pector of Brain Shark and Adam Baterin of Iron Mountain. Now, I know these two personally, and they're absolute rock stars when it comes to the CRM system and how it impacts marketing automation. Now, Chrissy is the Operations Technology Manager at BrainShark, which provides more than 1,500 customers with a cloud-based software for creating, sharing, and tracking online and mobile video presentations. Christine is responsible for evaluating, integrating, and operating the SaaS technologies used by sales, marketing, and the services teams. Now, Adam is the Director of Salesforce.com Technology at Iron Mountain. Adam's responsibilities include leadership of Salesforce.com and CRM initiatives and best practices on a worldwide basis. Adam is a recognized CRM Salesforce.com expert in the Northeast, and he is the leader of the Salesforce Boston User Group. He's famous for his best practices speaking engagements at the Dreamforce Conference and his advanced admin and developer certification. Now, Adam was also recently inducted into the Salesforce.com MVP program, which is currently limited to only 35 people globally. Adam and Chrissy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Ed.
So we've got the unique benefit of we're all here located in the Northeast waiting for hopefully the last snowstorm of the season to hit. So we'll get on with this interview. We'll talk about strategy and tactics. We've got a great mix of talent here to talk about both of those at each level. Because with technologies like this, we're talking about marketing automation and CRM and how they impact the enterprise. And you can't do that without both strategy and tactics. So my guests today are masters of those things. So I want to take a minute and get to know you for a few minutes for our guests. And your roles have something in common. You know, you manage a critical resource for managing some of your company's infrastructure, Salesforce.com. Adam, starting with you, can you tell me a little bit how you got started in that role?
Sure thing, Ed. So really my career and my background, I really grew up in sales operations and was an early adopter to Salesforce.com. Consider myself a student of CRM and everything to do with the best practices around CRM. And that really demands that you get deeper into some of these amazing applications such as Salesforce.com or the Eloquus and some of the other marketing automation tools that are out there in the industry. And so as an early adopter to Salesforce.com, I kind of continued to dedicate my career to that in more of a sales operations type capacity. And then ultimately, as my career progressed, recently transitioned over to Iron Mountain. And as you mentioned, am leading the Salesforce.com deployment here and the platform and helping the organization with CRM best practices on a global scale.
And Chrissy, could you take a moment to talk about how you got started and a little bit about your early career and how you found yourself in this position?
Absolutely. So similarly to Adam, he started in a sales operations role. I was actually on a marketing position, doing marketing campaigns, email, types of things online, and kind of grew to the trends of today where everything moved online, marketing automation and Salesforce.com, and so from there began exploring some of these other technologies and connecting them and integrating them, and now transitioned over to a role that is focused on the technology itself and the business processes that support the technology.
Hey, so, you know, the title of today's show is sort of the What I Wish I Would Have Known Then, a CRM Administrator's Tale of Marketing Automation Integration. So obviously this has huge impacts to any organization. And if they're not looking at it in that context, they're probably missing out, and they're probably rolling out technology that isn't going to meet a real business need. Now, as you, Chrissy, I know you've been down this road twice. And when you look back at sort of the first time of, you know, how you threaded these things together and maybe some of those lessons learned, what was it like the first time you started to roll this out?
Sure. So we at BrainJerk began our online marketing with the very traditional manual types of campaigns and executing email sends on, and then moved to marketing automation to kind of scale this as we grew. And so the whole idea of marketing automation, we were so excited that we kind of went overboard. So we made three areas that we made mistakes in the first time around were probably the data, the content, and then the campaigns structure themselves. So I'll just elaborate a little bit on each of those areas for the benefit of our listeners. So with data, with our first system, we purchased the marketing automation system and then spent several months cleansing our database, standardizing, organizing to prepare. But we had already purchased the marketing automation system. So we really wasted several months of the license when we could have been working beforehand on data hygiene and standardization while we were evaluating the marketing automation vendors. And the second area the first time around should have paid more attention to was the content itself. We didn't do a good job of organizing our content and creating marketing assets that could be reused or recycled across different mechanisms. So, for example, a white paper could become a webinar topic, could become a blog text. A lot of our content tended to had one use case and wouldn't generate interest at every stage of the buying process. So the second time around, we had more of a strategy for the content and made sure that we could use it in different places. And then the last area that we made some mistakes in was the campaign structure. We really overcomplicated things with our campaigns and tried to do way too much up front with the first system. And we tried to set up extremely complex and segmented campaigns. And then we basically ended up breaking apart and just blasting out manually because things were impossible to track. So our marketing automation tool became essentially an email blasting tool, which was totally not the purpose of it at all. So instead, I would recommend for the campaign side of things, just start with a simple tactic. So make a list of your typical marketing activities that your company completes. For example, follow up to website forms that people submit or people who visit your trade show booth, follow up to them. And then automate a few of those key activities first. Do that the first thing you can, and then you can spend more time on your more advanced programs. And then secondly, tackle your those more advanced programs themselves by identifying the areas of your revenue cycle that need the most improvement and prioritizing your goals. So maybe your goals are lead generation versus nurturing, or you're focusing on target industries instead of focusing on the whole database. So when we rolled out our second marketing automation system, we had a good hold on the data. We had our content outlined, and we could focus on the campaigns and the more advanced marketing automation scenarios. And so we really ramped up pretty quickly to using some things like lead scoring, advanced list segmentation with demographic and behavioral data, like in dynamic content and emails, and then really this feedback, closed-loop feedback between our CRM and marketing automation systems.
You bring up some great points there, Chrissy. I mean, as far as you know, I want to take the first one you mentioned, which is data. Now, I know Adam's got some experience on this side of the house where, you know, it's a matter. It's not necessarily a matter of, well, it is partly a matter of what data you have, but it's also a matter of what that data needs to accomplish for your business, right? Setting that strategy and determining who needs to see what data where is a key component before you can even, you know, think about rolling the system out. Adam, can you elaborate on that?
Sure, Ed. There's so many types of data challenges that you face. So let me give you just kind of a almost a funny example of a data challenge at an organization the size of an Iron Mountain. And it goes back to what Chrissy was speaking about with respect to how important it is to get your head around the process and making sure that that's articulated kind of earlier and getting that strategy too. Let's take something as simple as writing an activity from your marketing automation platform over to a Salesforce.com. When you think about the magnitude and the scope of the types of activities, So it becomes very important, well, which activities are we going to write over to our CRM system? For example, every time a customer or a prospect clicks through an email, do we want to write that over to our CRM system? You could imagine the magnitude of the activities that you could write to a Salesforce.com for an organization this size. I mean, it would just be unbelievable. So you need to be very thoughtful about the types of data that we push into the CRM systems and the sales automation systems from the marketing side. We've got to be really, really cautious about that. And then in addition to that, on the data side, it's also just as important that your field reps, your inside reps, understand what that data means, that there's these just basic and fundamental definitions associated to what a lead is, or when we write activities over to a contact, what does that mean on the data side? And then certainly there's a host of issues around duplications and when do we create a lead versus when do we append something to an existing record. So really, Ed, it just comes back to early on in the process, it's just so important to write out what that process flow would look like and get a strategy articulated as early in that process as possible.
And Adam, I know you said there's some, you have offices overseas, so is there a challenge with different languages?
There certainly is, right? Our, for example, lead routing queues and data standardization. If you want to have something as simple as it sounds, as to have a lead routing queue that if it says United States and in Massachusetts, it goes to this queue, but if it's in London, it goes to this queue. It's so important that you've standardized things as simple as the country name or the state name, that there's good, solid standardization in your data there, because absent that type of standardization, your lead routing queues and queue mechanisms aren't going to work. All of your reporting is going to be difficult. You'll have multiple versions of what essentially is the same country or leads being sent into the same region. So that data standardization, it's really critical.
And for us, too, like just standardizing, we focus primarily in the United States. We also have some UK constituents. However, really just the standardization, like Adam said, is so key for the marketing campaigns and for the CRM. And so we made the mistake the first time around not identifying what fields are super or what characteristics are important to track. So the second time around, we realized that for our marketing purposes, we wanted to segment our audiences and messages by department, by job title, by industry. So we took the whole data process and moved it into marketing. So marketing was controlling the data entry and standardizing it and creating some automated processes that would update fields, and then those fields would feed the marketing automation system. And so that was a big thing. We sort of had a data washing machine, and we used the marketing team to do that. And so our sales team, the database is essentially, it's editable, but it's a lot, there are aspects of it that are locked down completely and controlled by marketing. And we also use some tools there that for mass merging duplicates, getting rid of duplicates. We use the email address as a duplicate merging function, and so these tools help automate some of the updates, and then just the ongoing maintenance of the data is super important as well, with using dashboards or reports creatively to see which fields are not updated correctly. That's helpful for us, a sort of a reverse dashboard that would say, here if you had a department field that would show sales, marketing, HR, department job titles, which ones are not mapped, which ones are not filled in, and then just also the process actually purging bad data. That's something that a lot of companies don't think about, but they really need to. When an email bounces, when there's an opt-out, when the person just doesn't respond to anything, you really need to think about, are you going to remove them from your database? Or you should probably not market to them because it could affect your email scoring and you could be on some blacklists. So just some data considerations that we find important.
Yeah, I think the standardization of fields is something that probably any marketer or anyone that has just rolled out marketing automation is going to see. There's two things in my experience that marketing automation, when you deploy it, magnify. One is it's a very hungry machine, and you need a lot of content, and the content has to work together. One piece has to follow another. And then from the data side, as you go and you try to do this segmentation, for instance, you mentioned states, right? Somebody could type New Hampshire, or they could type NH, or they could type N.H, or they could spell it wrong entirely. So, you know, having those fields standardized on the front end, perhaps on your web forms, and as lists come in and as they get cleansed before they're even imported into the system, having those practices in place really help with your targeting and your messaging and your delivery, because then you can properly segment your data. Do you have dedicated resources to working with that data to try to keep it clean?
Absolutely, we certainly do. We've got a lot of resources and a lot of individuals that are dedicated to ensuring that type of data standardization is occurring. And certainly, we're using some bolt-on tools to ensure that happens as well. And Ed, there's also another type of structure when you use a loose term like standardization that I feel like individuals don't often think about this under the umbrella of standardization, but I think it's fitting. And here's something that we should consider or individuals should consider when they're trying to standardize marketing data, is how would you group lead records and map them over to the corresponding sales teams. I know that in a lot of organizations, there's this struggle with mapping leads by the ownership of that lead into these bigger categories. And in an organization the size and the scale of an Iron Mountain, one of the challenges that we had, and it really speaks to kind of what would you do different the second time, and it's something that we're a practice that we're putting in place right now, is we've invested a lot of time to articulate our sales hierarchy, like the literal users in what segment and district and region that those users roll up to, and then mapping an overlay of that same hierarchy onto the lead records. And what that does is it positions us well to be to create those accountability reports, so you could look at all of the leads that have been pushed over to sales, and they're speaking the same language. So in the past, it's been difficult to say for this geographic sales region, here's the number of leads that we've given you, because we didn't have the mapping mechanism from lead over to opportunity. Those were completely disconnected. But by adding metadata at the user or the owner level, you could cascade that down to both the opportunity and the lead. And what it does is it produces the ability in your reporting to create good, solid accountability, and it's a one-for-one match. So we could show exactly the leads that have gone to a particular owner in each segment, in each district, in each line of business that we have.
And just to add on to that, I feel like it's a challenge for the even the data providers out there. A lot of them have this contact kind of location information on a person level, but it's another thing to map it to the physical location of that company or that branch. So we work with a number of data providers, such as OneSource or InsideView, Jigsaw, ZoomInfo, D&B Hoovers, and all of them do have great data either on the account level or on the contact level, but that connection between the two is something that is a challenge. And it's almost, I've seen some of these more modern, like, social media almost tools where it will, like a LinkedIn. So they have the users themselves are updating their contact information, but still to map that to their account is a challenge. So a lot of companies like both of our companies in house are trying to do the same thing. So it's a challenge for I'm almost presenting this out there for somebody to come up with a solution.
Yeah, it's difficult to take, especially in a large organization. I mean, even if we look at Iron Mountain, would I be able to tell where people worked, where they were located, where they physically located? So if I was having an event in Washington, D.C., I could invite the appropriate people. Right? We have the headquarters address, and we can deal with that, but we don't always have the insight to know where that individual sits. And there are some companies that are working on that, right? OneSource is working on it a little bit. ReachForce has some data on that. Some of the other sites depend on some user-submitted data, which is can be sketchy at times. I think that standardization and that, Adam was talking about lead routing and making sure that those leads are shown with that appropriate person in the appropriate territory. Are there service level agreements in place to make sure that, when you hand something over, something is followed up in a timely manner, and if not, what happens? Are there those types of agreements in place?
So what we love about marketing automation connected with the CRM is kind of creating these closed loop processes / service level agreements between our organizations. And what I mean by that is for example, marketing can execute campaigns, and deliver and track and know how many people they're sending over the fence to the sales team. The service level agreement is some percentage of those activities are elevated enough that they require follow-up by the sales team. And so we use CRM to track if the salesperson has followed up or if the salesperson has closed or redispositioned that lead, that person back to the marketing team. So you can see this closed loop process, and the service level agreement is that each team is executing. So we use some central dashboards or reports that show the sales team what marketing is delivering to them, broken down by team, by territory, and on the opposite side, the shows the marketing team how many people have been followed up with. And so they on a weekly basis, the two execs from the different departments can sit down and look and make sure things are flowing correctly.
Yeah, and that's always a challenge to communicate what marketing's doing in a way that sales is going to understand it and be able to act upon it. Right? As Adam said earlier, you could write all these activities over, but what do they mean to the salesperson, and what's their appropriate next step? Right? You know, if you can write every email open over to the system, who is that for, and why is it there? You know, for instance, you talked about having some service level agreements in place with sales as far as, you know, did action on this or didn't they? Do you have any programs in place or mechanisms for recovering things that go cold?
That's a great point. That's actually key for marketing. I think it's one of the things that marketing automation does well, and the benefit of it is creating these sort of catch, like safety nets almost. So sales is required to follow up, but if they do not, or if you don't want that lead to grow cold. So it's this concept of nurturing, you know, and or rewarming or just keeping those people around. So all the marketing automation vendors too, a lot of them have blogs, and I've seen this as a hot topic across the board about how you can you know, rewarm or just ongoing nurturing programs, best practices for that.
Yeah, and you know, it's a matter of, are those, you know, again, it's a case of, do the real world actions get reflected in the system, right? Are those people putting things in the system that are helping marketing market better, right? Are the sales team, are they contributing to the process? You know, because if they're not in the CRM and they're not participating, how, you know, marketing doesn't get that feedback. Adam, have you put any systems into place or processes into place where, you know, sales is accountable to entering certain information into the system so that marketing can then go do its job better, or so that you can better track how things are flowing through the pipeline?
Absolutely, Ed. And some of the examples would be. And again, I really believe, just want to emphasize how important it is to go all the way back to the front end of the process and make sure that the process and the strategy is laid out. And let me answer your question with this type of an example. So at a previous organization, we constructed a marketing automation connectivity into Salesforce.com in such a way that if the particular not the lead, if a prospect or a customer had come in and hit a download side, downloaded a white paper, what have you, we built the intelligence to say, if they're a customer, let's just write the activity over to the CRM system. But if it's a prospect, let's go in and create a lead and then go through a very formalized process that we can hold inside sales and field sales accountable. So the only challenge with that type of an approach is, where's the closed-loop process for an existing customer that wants to expand their business, right? And that's why it goes back to the very beginning of the process to make sure that you have the framework in place, whether it be with an, let's say, an enterprise account executive or some type of an account manager that is responsible for managing every single existing customer relationship. And so you're making a decision early in the process to say that I know this customer enough that I don't need my inside sales and field sales people chasing after leads that come in. But if it's a prospect, we want to have a very rigorous and clearly defined closed loop process, as Chrissy keeps mentioning, that we can manage to their lead process and make sure that it can be fully tracked by sales managers, that we can document it with dashboards and hold the reps accountable to a specific SLA and responding to everything that marketing is pushing at them.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to mention, where it's not just a matter of that this is always a prospecting activity, right? Marketing automation can be used with customer communications, and customers can spill into prospecting programs by accident. You need a way to identify those people and be able to push their activity to the appropriate person within the organization, because they don't follow the same process. Right? They shouldn't be getting called by the lead qualification person, as you mentioned, right?
I see it. It also helps you to have, like as Adam mentioned, that executive support, or that executive role, the person who really can focus on defining the process and has a good idea and good vision of how a technology could support that. So at BrainShark, we have Dave Fitzgerald, who's our executive vice president of the marketing sales team, and he's so good at taking here's the sales process, here's the marketing process, and how can we benefit from a technology to alleviate some of those inefficiencies and not bring in a technology before we have the process. So I think that's a key thing, is to have that person who can do both and connect.
Yeah, and I would agree. I mean, you have to have that executive level decision so that you can manage this across the company. It can't be a point solution, right? Which brings up a good point. You talk about Dave's involvement, and I know Dave's a huge fan of dashboards, and so when you're creating those reports and those dashboards and those analytics that you need your sales or executive team to be able to see, to prove what's happening in the funnel, to look at particular points in the process that maybe need to be optimized. What can you recommend as far as that, and sort of what has your experience been in creating these and communicating it across the organization and up? Maybe Adam, you can take that.
Sure. So certainly the dashboards and the analytics associated with overall all of the leads that marketing is producing, right? If you think about it from a high level, it really goes back and it speaks to we're going to invest in either more marketing or more salespeople, whether it be inside sales reps or field reps, right? So at the end of the day, the real question is which one's more effective? Do I want to pull the trigger on increasing my budget for the marketing team, or do I want to pull the trigger and go out and buy some more inside reps and field reps and sales enablement and all those types of things? And so at the highest level, the dashboards and the analytics, it becomes really, really important for all of the decision making. So not only is it important just for the sake of actually going out there and winning new business, right? That's the primary goal. But it's how are you winning that new business? Which one is more effective at doing that, and which one drives the greatest ROI from a strategic perspective? So in all of the organizations I've been at, you can imagine the scrutiny, and I'm sure that all of us that are hearing this have been part of those types of discussions where there's intense scrutiny sometimes with respect to the dashboards, because the question is how much marketing influence was there? Then it lends itself into did the sales rep not convert the lead right? Did marketing really drive this particular opportunity, but yet the rep created the opportunity in a vacuum? And the reason I believe that type of activity occurs goes back to all the way back to the front end of the process where maybe we didn't train our inside sales rep the right way, and the rep didn't understand how to convert the opportunity and didn't understand the impact of selecting the primary campaign source on a given opportunity and those types of things. So it's the value of dashboarding and analytics with respect to overall marketing automation. It is just critical in every sense, Ed.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
I think that's great. That's right on. That's exactly it. And just to add to the executive level dashboards, what the great thing about marketing automation and CRM is that you can see this dynamic movement of the data. It's not the static, rigid Excel, you know, the older version of data. It's actually moving. So every single day, every single hour, every single second, you can see the live information, what's going on at that point in time. So you have the executive level, but what's also important to do is to connect additional dashboards down at each level, so that if the executive looks at the dashboard and sees that marketing is doing this or sales doing this, and then wants to know more information, he could go to either of those department heads, and that person would also have a dashboard that would go a little bit further into what is important to them, the metrics that they're compensated on or they're required to drive. And then even one step further, allow reports or dashboards for your individual employees to see what they're responsible for. So we use Salesforce.com, we actually are able to create just a few reports for every employee responsible for sales and marketing follow-up that show them their to-dos, and those roll up to a department level and then finally up to the executive level. And this is something we couldn't have done years ago because it the marketing automation CRM, these things didn't exist the way they do today.
And then just to build off of what Chrissy just said, then there's just a whole host of dimensionality that sits on top of that, which is by product line and do we invest our marketing campaigns and our lead nurturing and our and all of that activity, our sales development reps and inside reps on particular product lines or in verticals, and then at which level of the organization, the types of companies, the sizes of companies, right? So there's all of these other, just a multitude of dimensions that would sit on top of what Chrissy just said.
Yeah, and it's all good points that the data, to have that sort of moving view of what's happening now, didn't exist, right? We would spend half a week putting together the spreadsheets of what marketing did last quarter, and it would probably be a punch list of, oh, we did 3 press releases, we sent 4 campaigns, and we, went to these events, and we hope that contributed something to revenue, right? And then we looked for feedback from sales to say, was that stuff good? Did you get good leads? And, it would be a very anecdotal process, but now you've got that ability to look at that as a moving, living, breathing organism, and you can see where things are and where they're moving through and where they're getting stuck. And you can make those decisions about it. I love that Adam talked about how, they actually make resourcing decisions based on where they think they can augment the process. As you looked at those dashboards and you looked at that stuff, I mean, what have you seen as far as how marketing's what we've been delivering and how that's changed, right? What have we been reporting on that's different now? We used to report on our opens and clicks and things like that, which have an application at a tactical level. But what about the executives? What are we them about? How are we changing that dialogue with how marketing communicates with sales? Right, we're talking about revenue. We're talking about the same things. We're not talking about an obscure marketing metric, page views or time spent on site. That doesn't mean anything to a guy that's carrying a quota. Right, we now need to talk about revenue. And how have you sort of seen marketing's impact on that? Adam talked about influence on a deal. How are you digging deeper into that?
I mean, it's huge, right? In every organization, and certainly everybody has unique products or unique go-to-market strategies. But at the end of the day, you very much can get to the point with marketing automation and a good tight integration into CRM that you could infer that based on this number of prospects or this number of website hits and downloads and different campaigns, that we could make the comparison between that and if I go out into the marketplace and buy 10 new inside sales reps, and assuming that those 10 new inside sales reps can receive 100 leads a week or whatever the metric is, that I'm going to get from an ROI perspective X number of revenue or X number of pipeline out of that. So, Ed, I mean, it's critical, right? It's an entire paradigm shift when in the past, to some extent, it was largely guesswork because there are so many dimensions about those that you're targeting, the type of product and all that. So without the marketing automation and the analytics associated to it and the win rates that are associated with all of the leads that were converted in direct response to this or other campaigns, it really just builds, right? That intelligence that's associated with the marketing automation platforms, it builds and you become more and more intelligent, more and more strategic with your investments. And that, when we can be very strategic with our investments, that's what translates into that real competitive advantage in the marketplace. That's how you win. That's how you make a real difference.
And the other thing that I've seen with marketing is it's really the role and responsibilities of marketing has expanded a lot in both directions. And first, in just the whole inquiry, social media, marketing is responsible for a lot out there online that in the past might have just gone unnoticed and untracked. And on the other side, the opportunity side of things, marketing is now, because of marketing automation, because of the technology capabilities being better at following up or better at monitoring follow up than an actual person can be, marketing can actually have an impact on an opportunity. If an opportunity is not being attended to by sales, marketing can go in through automation and continue that. And then finally, once the customer situation happens, marketing also has a role there where continuing ongoing customer relationship and customer experience. So it's expanded a lot, and that's just another comment to add.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. I mean, when we look at, you know, we go to different trade shows and we hear speakers and they talk about marketing's relationship with sales and marketing and sales alignment. One of the common things that, you know, they tend to say over and over is marketing is owning that conversation longer, right? The sales cycle is longer. The educational path is longer. The vehicles and the ways people can interact with your company are so much more varied, right? They don't pick up the phone and call your company anymore. They go and check you out on social media and ask their network, and it's part of marketing's responsibility to monitor that and initiate a dialogue at the appropriate point. We also own that person longer. Right, we're doing the qualification, and many times the lead development team reports into a marketing structure. So that what we hand over to sales is considered a marketing qualified lead or marketing qualified opportunity. We're handing that directly over. So we've owned that front end of the process, and then as you said, you know, we've got the ability now to look into each opportunity, and perhaps there are nurture programs that we can put into place to take something from one stage of an opportunity or the next, or red flags that we can send off to say, hey, this thing's going cold. You know, somebody needs to pay attention to this. You know, what are you doing as far as alerts or notifications to your sales teams?
I think it really depends on the organization and who handles what. But it's back to the process. What are they responsible for? And ultimately that's where you will get your alerts and notifications that you can set up. So, for example, our inside sales team is responsible for marketing is responsible for generating activities and inquiries, but not all inquiries are needed to be followed up by a person. It's only those warmer, hotter inquiries that will pass over to the team. So we've not deemed the hotter inquiries as, you know, the contact us forms. They've elevated through lead scoring based on their demographic and or behavioral data to a certain point. They visited enough web pages. Maybe that will be a person required to follow it up with. Somebody who's visited a trade show booth. Higher quality person, that is when we will notify and alert the inside sales team. And then likewise, the inside sales team will warm that person up to the point where they become an opportunity passed to the sales team, and that is when the sales team would be notified. So think about the process and think about, and then look at the math, the ultimate waterfall math of conversions, activities to responses to, you know, qualifications, deals, closed deals, and make adjustments in the notifications and sprint process at that point.
Yeah, those are excellent points. I think the, you know, who needs to see which information, right? It's a matter of, and what is their next action? It still comes down to what is their real world business role, and how do you then perhaps automate or make some of those processes more efficient, right?
And it will help marketing out too, because marketing, the sale, you don't want the sales to say the classic, this leaves, why are you giving me this? So using scoring and automation, you can kind of refine those people that in the past you might have passed over as lead, but now you can kind of track and look and make sure that they actually are. Marketing can refine their what is a lead, what is a qualified inquiry, and then the sales team will be more appreciative and happy, ideally.
Will they ever say they have enough leads?
And Ed, it's such a it's such a funny just email in general nowadays, and I mean the fact is all of us receive offers on email day in and day out, and it's such a funny mix of, well, you know, when you're going to market. And I'm just speaking really from more of somebody that receives it at this point. How tightly do you integrate into your CRM application? I mean, I've had those vendors that when I hit a click through on an email, the second that I hit a click through, 35 seconds later, I've got an inside sales rep calling me, and that's honestly, that's a little creepy to me, to be honest with you. And it's so funny because it's so powerful now, right? I mean, there's so much that you can do. You can do the instant chats. You can do all of that type of notification. And so each organization's got to find that delicate balance of how much do we want to respond with email and how much connectivity back into our inside sales reps or our field sales reps do we want to have to the CRM application? And then what do we want them to do, and how soon does that particular activity happen after there might have been some form of compelling event on the prospect side?
Yeah, and I think that goes to, you know, what is that communication, the nature of it, and what is the expectation of the person that's receiving it, right? If I am surfing around your website, I might expect the chat window to pop up, but I'm not expecting my phone to ring, right? So it's a matter of what is that appropriate step. If I am on your support site and I log an activity and my phone rings 35 seconds later, I'm thrilled.
Right.
But if I'm just looking at a white paper and my phone rings 35 seconds later, I'm not thrilled. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I don't even know if I want to have anything to do with what this paper is yet.
We've run into problems in the past organizations where we loaded leads for campaigns that, you know, the individuals hadn't even attended the campaign yet, right? So there's all of those nuances. So you've got a poor prospect out there that's getting called by an inside sales rep saying, you know, hey, I see you're tied to this particular event or what have you, and the person on the other end is saying, we haven't even been there yet, right? And so there's a lot, it's just really important. Again, it goes all the way back. It's process, in making sure that you can flow chart out exactly who gets what and when and where and how it works.
But also don't overcomplicate it. Like,
yes.
Like I said, pick a couple key activities that you can alleviate and automate and do those, and then go down and decide, you know, look at the more complex processes and work on those.
Those are both really fantastic points. I mean, you can look at the capabilities you have at hand, and you can say, wow, we can do this, and then we can do that, and we can do this, and we can do that. When, you know, it may be that what's right for your business, if you can hit one point in that whole sales marketing process and make an improvement, you can impact your revenue dramatically. You don't have to tackle that whole cycle, especially not at the beginning. You can hit one point, make one really effective decision, and then make another. So when you look back at, you know, all this experience that you had, you know, many of the people listening are just beginning. They may not have marketing automation, and if they do, it may not be tied to their CRM. You know, from your experience being the Salesforce administrator, and having had to deal with things like bad data coming into the system and trying to keep that view clean for sales and trying to maintain strong dashboards for executives, what do you have for a couple of tips that you could provide the audience as they get started?
Mm-hmm. I think number one, it's the data. Standardize your data. Really focus on that before you do anything else. Also, the process and the technology. Keep things as simple as possible, and also use the technology as it was designed first before you try to recreate it or redesign it. So a good example is with Salesforce.com, you can create unlimited customizations and unlimited numbers of fields. But what they've done with just the native application is they've tried to templatize it to the to most businesses. So find your peers, too, and figure out what they did. Just as simple, standard as possible. And then think about how you can add it or customize it to alleviate additional burdens. And then integrate whenever possible. So connect the two systems so that you can have this closed loop process feedback loop between your organization, between your company, and so ultimately it can roll up to the executive level for revenue tracking and visibility and executive involvement.
And that integration is a great point, because some of the data lives in marketing systems, some of the data lives in sales systems, some of it lives in services systems. The more you can do to tie that complete picture together, the better you'll be able to make decisions and the better you'll be able to see it as a moving thing and not just snapshots in time. Adam, do you have anything to add?
Ed, I would just add to what Chrissy just said, and I totally agree with everything she said. I just add is, put yourself, when you're designing the system, or even if it is a redesign, put yourself in the inside sales rep's position or the field rep's position and say, I'm about to bang through this list of 100 prospects that potentially hit our website, attended a trade show, or what have you, and put yourself in their shoes. What does that person need to be successful? They need to understand about that prospect. They need as much accurate information so when they get on the phone and they start with the elevator pitch, that the person on the other end, the prospect, isn't frustrated because that inside sales rep doesn't know anything about them, doesn't know anything about why they attended, if they attended the show. Oh, by the way, let's say they attended 5 other trade shows that related to your organization, and make sure that you arm that inside or field sales rep to be as effective as they possibly can, and then likewise, put yourself in the prospect's shoes. How many emails are they receiving on a monthly basis? What types of communications on the automation system? We can't hit them too hard. We've got to give them the opt-in or the opt-out methodology where appropriate and all that type of thing. And just really think about the prospects and the actual person on the other end that's receiving all of that marketing automation, whether it be email and all the other things connected to that.
Again, fantastic points. I mean, even just because we can put a marketing automation system into place, it's still about the people that need to interact with that system and the people that are involved in the communications.
We aren't robots yet.
Exactly right. Well, Adam, Chrissy, thank you so much for your time. This was a ton of great information. I hope the audience really got something useful they can walk away with and try to help their organization move forward and move towards tying their marketing investments to their revenue numbers. Our next show will be April 5th with David Carell of Bizzo. So we're looking forward to talking to him. Hope you can join us, and thank you.
Thank you.